This is an interview with Governor Victor Attia at his office downtown Portland, Oregon. The interviewer for the Oregon Historical Society is Clark Hansen. The date is December 15th, 1992. This is tape eight, side A. In our last session, we covered your years in the state house, and now we're going on to your time in the Senate.
Yes.
And I was wondering, first of all, what prompted your decide to move over to the Senate?
It's really very difficult to figure out precisely. I do know that our incumbent senator, John Hare, he was pretty conservative. And I just really thought I'd like to get a different voice there in the Senate from Washington County. And I must also admit that running every 4 years was appealing rather than every 2 years. So it's very, I don't know if there's any what you call flashpoint. I just made a decision among the reasons I just told you.
Was it more of a pragmatic situation in terms of not having to run every 2 years, and or was
it wasn't that exclusively, you know, that was appealing. I wasn't really seeking what you'd call higher status. In other words, it wasn't a status thing with me. And I'm sure that John maybe triggered me to decide to do it, among other
John
as John Hare.
John Hare.
As I say, he was pretty conservative, and he used the words labor goon, and it was not one, two words, it was one word, and he's a nice guy. As a matter of fact, it was fascinating, and I've seen him once since I beat him, and that was at a funeral years ago. I haven't seen him since I beat him, 1964, that had been a while ago.
Yeah. Well, where did you see your own political career going at this point?
I didn't have a path. Mm-hmm. I think we mentioned earlier that I had no path. In other words, I'm going to do this, now I'm going to do that, and mm-hmm. I'm going to do something else. I never really had that path. Mm-hmm. I just took each step at a time. So I really didn't think about it, other than having a chance to work in the Senate. And oh, I would have to say as well, it's kind of nice to be in the Senate in the sense that in order to prevail, you need 16 votes. In the House, you need 31. Lobbying's a lot easier in the Senate to get 16 rather than 31. Incidentally, today's the 14th, not the 15th.
It's the 14th, though.
Yeah.
Good, then I have another day to shop.
You do.
Thank you.
This is also very interesting. In every election, and I began to perceive it early on, that was in my elective career, the very first report you heard was the one that prevailed. No matter what happened during the rest of the evening, even if it was just a few precincts, at least that was with me. So on that night, incidentally, those days, this was all hand tallied at the courthouse in Washington County. Mm-hmm. Had adding machines, and they put stuff up on the blackboard, the different as they would accumulate them. So I had heard on the radio they were giving some fragment reports, and the report was that John Hare was ahead. And so I'm driving out to Washington County, out to Hillsborough, that is, and I'm thinking about, gee whiz, thank you, I've enjoyed being in the legislature, you know, sort of a farewell going through my head. By the time I got there, that had changed. I was ahead, and then, but this was the only instance, and I can tell you particularly. First of all, I'm jumping ahead, but in '74, I kind of knew that I was not going to win. Get a good sense of what it's all about. In '78, I waited to come down to the hotel. Well, I actually came down, but to my victory party, but we parked out in front of the hotel, waiting for 8 o'clock. I wanted to hear the very first report. And the very first report, we've got now some reports on the governor's race. Straub 55, Atiyah 45. And then there was a pause. No, wait a minute, we have that wrong. It's the other way around. And I wasn't even startled at that point. I wasn't, because I knew that had to be wrong. It's just one of those things you felt inside. Mm-hmm. But and I watched some other races, and most often that's the case, even if it's fragmentary. If you kind of watch it, usually the first returns, most often, I wouldn't say always, most often prevail.
Mm-hmm. Well, they did in that case, didn't they?
They did in that case.
But in your 1964 election, now this was the primary. When were you running against John Eyre?
In the primary. Yeah, and I did the unforgivable. I'm an incumbent Republican House member. He's an incumbent Republican Senate member. Mm-hmm. And for one incumbent to run against another incumbent, vacating the House seat, you just don't do those things.
What happened to your House seat? Did it go to another?
He went Republican. No.
Republican.
Yeah, he was. Who took that? I'll have to stop and think about that. Well, let me put my head to it and I'll think of it. Might have been John Mosser. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I beat him in the primary. Another fascinating thing is that I expected the Hillsborough Argus to support John Hare. Actually, the Hare family was way back. Bill, John's father, was in the legislature, highly regarded, very highly regarded, and I regarded, you know, even as I became involved, and that would have been quite some time before. So I expected the Hillsborough Argus to support John Hare. I told Vern McKinney, who was the owner and publisher of the Argus after the election, I said, Vern, I expect you to support John, but I didn't expect you to just burn my tail off, because he really chewed me. However, they were good friends of mine, other than in that instance, during my whole career.
Well, what happened in the general election then?
I won it. It was easy. Again, I can't even remember my opponent, which is kind of strange. I continued my campaign, but that was no problem. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It wasn't hotly contested.
Did you have any kind of debates or anything that went on with your opponent in either the primary or the general election?
Well, the only one that would be in any importance, and I don't think I had any joint meeting with John Hare. Mm-hmm. I don't recall that we did. I don't remember. I suppose there may have been some joint meetings of some kind with my opponent in the general election, but I don't remember that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the outcome of the election was decidedly in your favor. It wasn't close or anything.
No, no. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, that was. I just don't have any recollection, but it was no problem.
So
the main race was the primary.
So the main race was the primary, and after you were elected, do you recall that point? I mean, was it a significant step for you? And do you recall any kind of feeling that you had after knowing that you were going to win or had won?
It's strange, really. It'd be some kind of euphoria, and yet there wasn't. I was delighted to have won. I'm delighted to move to the Senate. Going to now deal with some of the rascals that I dealt with when I was a House member. Kind of look forward to that. I can tell you, 2 years later, I went to the candidates tonight and sat there and asked questions where they've been asking me questions every 2 years. I was doing that more out of fun than I was out of seriousness. But now there wasn't anything special. It wasn't a matter, you know, if someone said, I'm going to be a House member for this period of time and then I'm going to run, then you say, okay, I achieved a goal of something I've been dreaming about. But as I've told you, you know, many times, and probably repeat again, I just didn't have those kind of steps.
Right.
It was just, okay, now I'm in the Senate.
Uh-huh.
So it wasn't as if I had dreamt and yearned for this Senate seat. It wasn't that at all. I just decided, well, now I think I'll run for the Senate.
Well, what were the main differences that you saw between the House and the Senate? You had mentioned an easier time getting support, not having to convince as many people. What other differences did you see between the House and the Senate?
Well, that year, the House went Republican.
So you had left?
And I'd left. my entire career, I've dealt as a minority member, even as a governor. But I knew, of course, what the House was all about. And mm-hmm. The Senate, I would tell you that there was less confusion, less people running around, smaller committees. All of that was, I think, conducive. I like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What were your committees, and how were they determined?
Well, of course, I'm a freshman freshman senator, but again, it was tax.
Since you were in the House, did that make any difference in terms of any kind of seniority that would translate over into the Senate?
No.
Not at all. You start all over again.
No, but seniority wasn't that big a deal. Mm-hmm. It really wasn't. Mm-hmm. The only thing is, as you moved along and you were there longer, when you're a freshman, either a House or Senate member, mm-hmm. even though I'd been in the House, a freshman Senate member, you ask the presiding officer, you know, these are the committees I'd like, but you're not sure you're going to really get them. This is where I'd like to sit. You're not even sure about that. But the longer you're there, the presiding officer will say, what do you want, and you can have it, and where do you want to sit? Mm-hmm. Now, when I say that, obviously, if there's another member sitting there, you don't bump them. You know, if it's an open seat, and I always like to sit near the front and on the side, and mm-hmm. most often I was either close or right at that position, even in the House. But the term of seniority, except for those things, which are really perks more than anything that relates to anything
right.
in particular, there wasn't anything special about years or longevity.
You were put onto the Taxation Committee, which was what you had wanted to be put onto.
Yeah.
Was there anything else that you wanted in terms of committee assignments?
Oh, I can't recall what I asked for. Over the years, I was on education, which I liked very much.
Mm-hmm.
I was on the Labor Committee, and I really liked it, except it got to be real frustrating to me. Frustrating in the sense that I really thought I was helping labor, but that's not the way labor looked at it. I can't remember the sessions, but maybe a couple sessions on the Labor Committee, I wanted to talk with George Brown, who was a labor lobbyist, mm-hmm. nice guy, liked him very much. Really basically say, I'm getting tired of being the black hat. I really feel that I'm helping labor. You guys come up with some crazy things that aren't worth a darn. The meeting started to take place, but George got a running jump on the evening, so by the time I got there to Chuck's, we had to put him to bed, so I never really had that discussion. Gosh, so much water's gone over the dam, it's hard to bring back some of these things. I didn't even know where to go look. Well, I know where I could go look, but I don't have those books anymore. I gave them all away. The journal and things of that kind.
Well, I was looking in the journal, and I noticed that in the session that you were put on to the Taxation Committee, the Education Committee, Labor and Industries, and also Planning and Development Committee. And on taxation, Ward Cook was the chair
yes.
of that. And you were a vice chair.
Yeah.
Was it unusual being your first term to get a vice chair position, or
no?
Is there any significance to vice chair? Would the vice chair, aside from presiding in the absence of the chair?
Well, yeah, you could preside,
mm-hmm.
but you better not do anything the chair doesn't want done. Which incidentally did happen later on when we can get into that story later on when Vern Cook was not in the room and he was chairman and. George Wingard was vice chairman and got a bill out. He got pretty upset about that. But that's very unusual. Ward Cook, really a fine guy. Fine great. Gentleman.
Ward
really,
Cook.
Yeah, you know, great guy.
Hmm.
Really a very fine guy.
Corbett was also on that committee. Was that Alf Corbett?
Yeah.
Yeah. And he was he'd been in the legislature for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Taxes was also an area that he was very interested in. What was your impression of him?
Very deliberate. He was not one of those bull in a china shop, mm-hmm. twisting arm kind of elected official, nor was Ward Cook. Really good, really gentlemen is what they were. And very clear. And he knew what it was, what he wanted to do. And I respected him. I liked him.
And Ted Halleck?
Now he talked to me. McCurick, is that the word? that's Ted. Ted would just go off like a skyrocket, just zoom.
Actually, Ted was on the planning and development.
That's right. Yeah, but Ted would just really, I'm serious. He'd just go off like a skyrocket, and you get to learn how to deal with Ted. You just let him go up into the air and wait till those sparks come to the ground, and then you can deal with him again. I liked Ted very much. He was very vexing at times, and a wonderful speaker. Oh, he could. He really was good.
Hmm.
He was good. Not necessarily persuasive, but really, he sounded good.
Well, also on the tax committee was Don Husband.
Mm-hmm. Don was, oh my goodness, what a guy, Don. He just only recently passed away.
Hmm.
Just recently.
Hmm.
Don, he was a local government attorney. Very meticulous guy. He didn't want anything. He wanted, I put it another way, he wanted everything on paper. You know, he wanted to see it. He just say it was not enough. He wanted to see it on paper. I remember that about Don. And very much of a local government. He was a local government attorney.
Hmm.
Not local in terms of small districts,
mm-hmm.
water districts, sewer districts, vector control districts, that's mosquitoes.
Oh.
You know, that those kind of the small districts, that was his practice.
There was somebody on there by the name of Stadler, and I'm not familiar with him.
Glenn Stadler from Eugene
as well. Uh-huh.
Glenn was just a nice guy. He was not the best, not the worst.
Mm-hmm. Tony Uturi was there.
Oh, really one of my real favorite guys of all time.
Mm.
Tony, you know, if Tony had been around in the metropolitan area, I'm sure he's the kind of guy who would have been a governor, and he'd been a good governor.
Mm.
But he comes from Ontario, the other end of the state, and it's kind of hard to build a big constituency,
mm-hmm.
from there.
Mm-hmm.
Great sense of humor, wonderful sense of humor, great laugh, but very bright man.
Mm.
I use him as an example. In those days, we were getting $600 a year, as I mentioned earlier, and I use him as an example. You couldn't, this guy clearly is making a contribution to the state of Oregon. $600 a year, he'd make that with one client in one afternoon. You know, he could have stayed home and made a lot more money if that's what he was after.
Hmm.
But very good, widely respected in the chambers and outside.
Hmm. What was it in his character that made him so highly respected?
Well, he was honest. He was he did his work. He worked
mm-hmm.
at it.
Mm-hmm.
Great personality, and when I say that, people just like him.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's kind of hard to bang on somebody you like. And I don't know. He was respected for his work, and liked for his personality. That's a good combination.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Was there any particular issue or any legislation that came out of that session on taxes that that you dealt with in that term?
I don't recall, no, I don't think so.
There was a $25 million account for direct property tax relief. That was one thing that came up. Did that go through your committee?
Could have. I will tell you that Don Husband was very big on senior citizen tax relief. Maybe that's what it related to. I think he called it incentive to live or something like that, which I thought was silly.
There was a reduction of taxes on capital gains and business inventory.
May have been a reduction. I think it was actually Jason Bowe I kept pushing for inventory, repeal of inventory tax, which I felt was unfair. I don't think it was that session. Jason Bowe was kind of a leader in the whole thing. We began to phase it out over a 10-year period of time. But I don't think that was a session. And I don't recall how that dealt with the inventory.
What was it about the inventory tax that that you found problematic?
Well, it just wasn't fair between businesses.
Mm-hmm.
Good example is that a lawyer makes his living from law books and of course what he's learned in school.
Mm-hmm.
I made my living selling rugs.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he doesn't have any inventory. In other words, he makes his money, but he doesn't have any inventory. I'm a businessman too, but I happen to have an inventory. And so we're going to tax this businessman, but not that businessman.
Mm-hmm.
This didn't seem right. And it was really, it didn't make much sense. Well, of course, I could see the difference. In the Oriental rug business, we could have a rug for 5, 6, 7 years. Obviously, we have a turnover in terms of a total turnover, but in terms of one rug, you could. So you're paying on one rug. But it wasn't just me, you know, small business people, you know, grocery stores and things like that. They were all being taxed on inventory.
Mm-hmm.
There was all kinds of silly things that went on. You had to have it in. A lot of people would get it in transit, put it on a truck and run it around so you don't have it on the last day of the year. Those are silly things. They're all trying to get around it because it wasn't just a fair tax. It just wasn't fair.
Hmm. On planning and development, Aarons?
Eddie Aarons, yeah.
Eddie Aarons was chair of that committee. What was Eddie Aarons like?
Eddie Aarons was a very quiet man. He was really mostly interested in agriculture. As a matter of fact, Eddie became, I think at one point for a short time, director of the Department of Agriculture after he'd left the Senate. Again, one of those nice senators that was there, not certainly not a leader.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Chapman?
Chappie?
Is that the nickname?
Chapman, yeah, Chappie. Well, Chappie occupied a seat in the Senate.
I see.
He was from Coos Bay, as I recall.
So there's not too much more you can say.
About Chappie?
Right.
I shouldn't.
No, you shouldn't. I see.
Well, he's nice. I mean, there's nothing bad. I just don't want to, I mean, nothing evil or dishonest. It's just that Chappie just was not an active participant. He occupied a chair.
Don Wilner was...
Yes.
...was on that committee as well, too. You've spoken about him before.
On which now? Which committee?
This was on planning and development.
And he was also on labor that year.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I remember him more on labor than I do on any planning and development.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ted Halleck was on that.
That's right.
And Lynn Newbery.
Lynn Newbery. Gradfeld was chairman, is that right? Is there Gradfeld?
I have Monahan.
Monahan, Tom Monahan, he was chairman. Yeah.
What was Tom Monahan like?
Teacher? He was the one that, the big case that said that a public employee couldn't run for the legislature, and so there was a big, he was the guy that was all centered around. As it turns out, the only public employee that can run for the legislature are teachers. No other public employee in Oregon can still.
Really?
Yeah.
Really, really.
That doesn't seem to be fair either.
Why did they have it set up that way?
That because he was a teacher, OEA was big, and they said, you know, no second-class citizens, and they got the thing on the ballot, and it passed. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But Tom Monahan was the guy that was doing it. I remember the Labor Committee, because now we talked earlier about the three-way bill, workers' comp.
Right.
And I wish I still had my souvenirs, and maybe I do if I hadn't thrown it away, but that was really something. That bill did finally pass, and we had the Hatfield's amendments, we had AFL-CIO amendments, we had Associated Oregon Industry amendments, and what other special interests? We had different colors for them. And the bill just looked like, I don't know what it looked like. It looks like some of the kids' jeans that they wear to school. It's all just the little, and these were not engrossed. These were all scotch tape in, you know, with different colors. It was a very colorful bill. And what I do recall, and I mentioned Don Wilner, and of course I remember Ted Halleck, and we mentioned Monahan and Newbery, and who else was there? There were some senior folks in there.
On the labor?
Yeah.
Well, Harry Boivin was there.
Yeah.
And Pearson?
Walter?
Was it Walter Pearson?
Walt Pearson.
I just have Pearson down here, but I wasn't sure whether it was Walter or not.
Had to be the only one.
Uh-huh.
The interesting thing was after we went through it hours on end, I'm just sitting there. I'm a freshman member of the Senate and, of course, the committee. And here are all these other folks that have been around for quite a while. And I'm participating and watching it and speaking my point in my mind and voting when it comes to different amendments, who's mm-hmm. it going to take or what variation. Anyway, finally put it all to bed, got it all done. Committee agreed to it, voted it out of committee. Don Wilner voted against it, and I'll speak to that in a moment. And so Tom Monahan said, and I've forgotten who he picked first, was, you know, one of the other folks. I'm just sitting there. Well, you carry the bill. No, I don't want to carry the bill. Well, you carry the bill. No, I don't want to carry the bill. Well, you carry the bill. I don't want to carry the bill. Okay, T, you carry the bill. You know, I'm just sitting there watching the whole process, and all of a sudden I'm carrying this bill. And I had heard about the three-way bill. I'd never been actually in the House involved with it, but I'd heard about it a number of times, but never really closely involved with it. So all of a sudden I'm carrying this bill. And I do recall that debate. Only two of us debated that day. And it went into the, after we had a lunch and recess and went into the afternoon. But Don Wilner was on the, carrying a minority report. We had to go through that one first. And then, but I and Don, the two of us were the only ones that debated that day on that bill. The only difference was I knew I had the votes. And I knew Don Wilner didn't have the votes. So we went through this long, torturous period of time, and then it passed.
Hmm.
But that's why I recall that. That was a big issue. That really was a big issue.
On workers' comp?
The three-way bill. That meant then that the state now had competition, because the state was the only one up to that point in time that could write workers' comp.
Mm-hmm.
This allowed private carriers and self-insurance. That's what they mean, three-way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what was controversial about that?
Well, first of all, as I told you, labor didn't like it.
Yeah.
Second, you know, when the state is the monopoly on something, they hate to give it up. It's just one of those things that it was a rather traumatic change. Here we've been doing it one way, meaning the state way, all these years, mm-hmm. and now to change it. And it was quite a trauma, a bit of trauma to get that job done.
There was a fellow by the name of Inskeep.
Yeah, John Inskeep.
John Inskeep?
Clackamas County, yeah.
What was he like?
John was very positive, but he's a very quiet man. He was not a leader in the Senate. I guess I pretty well said it. Mm-hmm. Nice fellow.